Okay, so the call's the recording portion of the call has started. The first, you know, usually like so far, 8 to 10 minutes of the call are not recorded. And so if you come on at 8 o'clock, Be'ez Hashem, I'll be here, and we can, you'll have a chance to. If you didn't email me at #WeQuitHiding2, if you didn't email me there with a really clear question, then you can use the first 8 to 10 minutes of the call as an opportunity, as your opportunity to call in with and say Q and, you know, questions, things that are bothering you, stuff that you'd like to be discussed and shared about on the call. And I'll try to do that. I give the first few minutes of the call to people who would otherwise share, you know, say something, but they don't want to because they don't want their voice recorded for posterity. And I understand that. So whatever, I'm inviting you to take advantage of that if you feel that way, if you feel like you'd like to ask questions, you don't feel like email is the best way to do it, and I would agree, and yet you don't want to have your voice recorded. So the first 8 to 10 minutes, you won't have your voice recorded because I don't turn the recording on until about now. I just want to be, like, abundantly clear about that because somebody called in yesterday and said, you know, if this thing's recorded, how am I, you know, what, you know, people aren't going to want to say anything. Okay. So, sorry, technical difficulty there. Okay, hold on. This is still not working. Hold on a second. Fine. All right, so getting back to our topic, if somebody is on the call, I just want to make sure that I'm coming through. Can you, somebody make a sound or something so that I can be sure?
Loud and clear.
Whoa, okay, beautiful. So, all right. So as far as the topic today, what I'd like to focus on is this topic of love. I'm gonna do that like someone on the call suggested, just for today, and we'll see what happens as far as what we'll talk about tomorrow. Maybe the topic of one day at a time will come up today as well, and at least in an introductory form. I spoke about it yesterday near the end of yesterday's call, in a very practical sense, how I understand and work with, put into action living one day at a time. That was spoken about yesterday, near the end of the call. So anyhow, there's a problem that a friend of mine brought to my attention the other day. Problem is that got into a lot of conversations, sort of conversations online about Yiddishkeit and all this, you know, et cetera, and tshuva and all this. Friend of mine got into a conversation with me. He's been going to meetings for about 5 months, 6 months, and he's, thank God, doing well. And his issue was about relationships, and he's been hiding for a decade, you know, for the past decade of his life, he's been hiding, you know, he's about 20, and he's been hiding for his whole life. In other words, isolating. It's common for people to isolate, and not just because we have big secrets. Excuse me for a second, I forgot. I want to start with the Tefila of the Haim. It's Dor Lashini Meira, Vasai, Yidabir Mirmo, and Kavalei Nafshi Sidom Nafshi Kinafar, like all of you here. Vasas the Vibus of the Sefer of Mitzvah Sefer Tadef Nafshi, Vachal Kami Mokashi Malay, Mirah Ferat the Sun, Akhil Mokashi Kham. And I want to be useful and that's why I'm here. So his big question was, at the moment, he feels like he doesn't really have any friends, you know? So now I want to just kind of, without giving away his anonymity or telling any details about him, I just want to clarify a little bit about his story and explain what it has to do with love. And what it has to do, and what love has to do with recovery, and how he's only making it in recovery because he's learning how to love, essentially. Let me just say this: when I first met him, he was in therapy with someone who he didn't trust enough to tell about his pretty serious pornography and masturbation habit. Okay, so he was having sex with himself, which is what masturbation is, and he was pretty frequently. It was very upsetting to him. He's a very good, very from, very good, good guy, a sincere, good from guy, and he was upset about what was going on And I said, well, I noticed that he had some other issues. And I said, well, have you ever tried therapy, for anything else in the past? Because it made sense to me that this guy, based on what he was telling me, has other emotional issues and probably was in therapy at some time. So what did they deal with, So he said, yeah, in fact, I'm in therapy right now, I said. So the conversation went on about what therapy was about, et cetera. And then I asked him, well, what does your therapist say about this issue? And he said, well, he's never told the therapist about this issue. Why should he? He's not there for this. He's there for, what, anxiety, let's just say, okay? So, so I said to him, well, why aren't you telling him? Is it because it's irrelevant or is it because you're ashamed? And he said, it's both. And I said, well, whether it's irrelevant or not, we'll have to see. But as far as the shame goes, you don't trust this guy. If you don't trust this guy enough to tell him everything about you, obviously it's relevant to your anxiety and whatever it is, and or depression or et cetera, in some way because you're anxious and upset about this. So, he was basically letting this therapist, as we often do, run the conversation, And they get paid, $100, $150, $250 an hour for leading a conversation. I mean, if you're the one with the problem and you need a product, so then why would you go into a store and ask somebody to tell you what you want to buy? Like, it doesn't make any sense. So, it's a pity that you're not opening up to him. It's kind of like the thing that I spoke about yesterday about asking a Rav Shaila. A lot of people or their wives ask a Rav Shaila that has something to do with their husband's recovery or if it's a guy or a gal with their own recovery maybe, and a Rav gives them some stupid answer, really stupid answer, even though the Rav is smart, has Das Torah, and is a great guy. But the reason he gave a stupid answer isn't because, of the Torah or because of the Rav. It's because the Shaila that was asked didn't give the Rav the true facts of the case. So if a guy comes to a Rav and says, ask some Shaila about, that has to do with his pornography use or what he's allowed to do. Am I allowed to go into a church so that I stop masturbating? The Rav will say no. Why should you do one avera to save yourself for another avera? Something like that. You know what I mean?
And the guy didn't say to the Rav the truth, because he's not just nasty. Zerlavatola isn't his problem. You know, if somebody's looking online week after week and year after year, really, compulsively, and has a love affair with a certain porn star, and that's called an affair with imaginary, you know, naked people, and it's continued for years, and he can't stop, and that's his problem. And then the Rav will give him some, you know, half brained etza, like get married, you know, or or if he's married, he'll start talking to him about, you know, shalom bias, which is, or kedusha, which are two code words for sex, and sometimes. And, you know, and it's not going to answer the guy's conscious. And then after a few months goes by and the Rav finally gets to see like what's really, really going on here, the Rav will give him the true answer, which is, I can't help you. Your problem isn't a Torah problem. You're nuts, you know? So, and then finally the Rav will give him the right answer, which is, you know, I've heard of guard your eyes and na na na, or I've heard of, you know, 12 steps, or I've heard of this Rav who's an expert in this stuff, or I've heard of a therapist who helps guys with this, you know, with this kind of a problem, you know, and he'll send the guy off in a better direction than where he was. So, but until then, you ask a shayla, you're allowed to do this for, how should the Rav understand that you need recovery if you don't tell him the depth and breadth of your actual problem in no uncertain terms, you know? But anyway, without getting any more off the topic, so this guy agreed. Oh, somebody's not on mute. Maybe you can help us by muting your phone. Thank you.
I mean, like 50 of these kids
yesterday. Uh-oh. Hold on. let me try to help this guy who thinks that he's on mute.
I'm warming up.
Oh boy. Anyway, we'll do the best we can here. Hello, you're not on mute, and we hear your conversation. You just said, I'm warming up. I'm trying to let you know who you are. Please try to mute your phone for the benefit of the Chevra. Okay, so before, I don't think he heard me, so I'm going to take a second out of here. I'm sorry. I'm going to text him, because I don't think he heard that he's, oh boy. I'm really sorry about this.
I'm going on mute.
Oh, yeah, you needed to go on mute before, buddy. All right. I love you. So, 1 second. Hold on a second. Okay, getting back to the topic at hand. Where was I? So a person starts off with so he starts with his therapist without telling him the truth about his situation in full. Now, granted, he wasn't coming to the therapist for help with his porn and masturbation problem, which was driving him crazy since the age of like 12. So, and was only getting worse, not better. So that's a problem, because if you don't trust the therapist in everything, then you really don't trust the therapist in anything, because the therapist is dealing with the whole you, or he's not helping you at all. So this guy opened up to his therapist. In the meantime, I knew that his real issue wasn't his relationship with this therapist, because it already became clear his problem was relationships in general. He didn't trust anybody. And I knew that that meant that he doesn't trust me. And why should he trust me? He doesn't know me. But he knew this therapist pretty well, and he still wasn't trusting him with the truth. So over time, it became clear he hadn't told his parents either. Now, that's understandable. What teenager tells his parents about his masturbation problem, you know? Except, that's kind of weird altogether, right? But some do, but it's definitely uncomfortable and, you know, whatever. So eventually, he ended up telling one of his parents as well, because it became necessary. about a year later. But first, he told his therapist, why do I mention that in a discussion about love? I'll tell you. And I like to bring this fact in to this discussion always, even if it's not 100% related. Why? I have a question, and I don't expect people to answer because, you know, this part of the call is being recorded and a lot of people don't want their voices on here for posterity. And why are there two luchos instead of just one? Everybody knows the first of the luchos is for Ben Adam Lamakom, and the second luach of the Shnei Luchos Abris is Ben Adam Lachavero. They're both Ben Adam Lamakom. They're both Hashem's will for us to do. So there's something he's asking us to do because he wants us to do them, period. However, one of them is Ben Adam La Makom pretty much exclusively, as you can see, Anochi Hashem Lokecha, etc. And the other one is pretty much exclusively Ben Adam La Chavero, as you can see from, you know, Lo Sinaf, Lo Sigzo, you know. It's these are things that a person does with his fellow man. It might not be Ben Adam L'Chavero in the classical sense, like we like to say that you're hurting somebody, because Lo Sachmod, how you're hurting somebody, automatically with just Lo Sachmod. But the gist of it is, it's about relationships between people and your responsibility and obligations to other people, and your view of other people, and it clearly is interhuman mitzvahs, whereas the first are all things that are not about interhuman relationships. Okay, the question though is, what kibud av v'eim doing in there? What kabedas avicha v'simecha l'man yirich v'nimecha, etc. Right? What does that have to do with anything? You know, in the first luchos, that's the obvious question. And I'd love it if this were a discussion call for me to just open that up to discussion, because people will have a lot of great things to say on that question, I think. The point that I like to bring it out for is this. It's clear to me that the relationship that you have with the Ribbono Shel Olam is created by the relationship that you have had, that you grew up with your parents. This concept of a God, the idea that people talk about, that all humans have a basic need for a deity, that belief in a God is something that's just innate to the human experience, to being a human being, that a lot of course, religious people and religious philosophers, say, is based on this whole thing, that you grow up with these gods, these two gods, this mother and this father. You grow up with this experience. All your needs are taken care of. You're completely, you know, your whole world is totally self-focused. Not selfish, just self-focused, experience-focused. And there's no outer connection. The first outer connection is where a baby realizes there's me, and then there's outside me, is this realization that the mother is separate from him and that he needs the mother. When a newborn infant's crying because they're wet, they don't realize they need the mother to change them or something. There's no me, there's no outside me. You know what I'm saying? This me and outside me thing is part of human development, and it's a huge, huge thing. Once that becomes clear that there's me and there's outside me, all of a sudden there's a problem, you know. Which is like, what is the meaning of what's outside me exactly? And does this mean I'm alone? Am I going to be taken care of? What's going to happen? You know, And the parents either supply the answers to those questions or they don't, you know, by taking care of the child. And the child learns things about reward and punishment, guidance, power struggle, you know, who has more power, less power, freedom, lack of freedom, consequences from my choices. You know, a child sleeps late. You know, what are the consequences? You know, he gets fired from a job. I mean, come on, you know. So it's up to the parents to provide an artificial world, so to speak, where the consequences are as natural as possible and yet as real as possible, and teach the child through not like a lesson plan, but through living, an experience of living, through experience, you know, what life's about, how to live. And it's not just right and wrong. It's the relationship to a power greater than themselves. That's what the parents are, a power greater than themselves, than the child, a higher power. And this is really what the mother and the father are doing. And that's why there are two mitzvahs in the Torah regarding parents. One is Kabedas Avicha Vesimecha, which is honor your mother, your father and your mother. And if you look in the Shulchan Aruch and the Nosi Kelim and every in Halacha, you'll see that all the mitzvahs of Kibud Av Eim are asin. They're all mitzvahs asay. There are no mitzvahs los asay in Kibud Av Eim. All the mitzvahs in Mora Eim Vav, fear or awe of your parents, of your mother and father, all of the pratim of that mitzvah are los asays. There are no asin in Mora Eim Vav. It's all don't do this, don't do that, don't do the other thing. Ka Beidus Avicha Vesimecha is all do this, do that, do the other thing. Okay? That's just the way that they are. Mitoch Hein Atashamei Alav, Mitoch Lav Atashamei Hein. Okay, but we do have in the Torah asin and los asays. So, you know, if you say mitoch lav atashamei hein or vice versa, then there's no asay and los asay at all. So, but no, in kibud av v'eim and mora eim v'av, there's asay and los asay, and that's just the way it is. Why is this? Because the Zohar Kodesh says that basically asay is a mitzvah of ahavas Hashem. That's all ahava. And los asay is v'yareisa me'elkecha, all the los asay together. So they can be put together into two mitzvahs. All the mitzvahs asay and los asay are ahavas Hashem and yiras Hashem. So they're, all the asays are ahava, and all the los asays are yira. And that's the way it works with your parents. And it's not a coincidence that those are the two mitzvahs for your parents, and those are the two general mitzvahs for, obviously, governing Avodas Hashem. You know, because your parents are like demigods to you as your little baby and a little child. And no matter how frum you are, no matter how frum you're brought up and all this stuff, there's still a natural feeling inside the child that their relationship with God is predicated on, it's defined by their relationship with their parents. So I have a separate thing about how this basically, this is part of a, this is part of events, of experiences rather, that a human being is able, not everyone does, but is able to go through. Which is first the child dependent on the parent, and then afterward, the child having relationships with other children, and then the child marrying, you know, the human marrying, and then the relationship with friends is on one level. The relationship with a spouse is on another level. The relationship with your own children is on a much more selfless level. It's increasing selflessness, increasing bitul to what's outside you happens. But the parents and the friends in childhood are the ones that create the capacity for bonding, for connection at all, just for connection. And that's very important. If a person has those things, then their marriage is going to be, an honest marriage, a real marriage. It's going to be a marriage, because there'll be connection, the capacity for connection, the wiring is all there. And now they're just using it for the connection they have with their husband or with their wife in the case of the man. And all that is as it should be, And then having children becomes something that's just the next natural level, where before I'm devoted to my wife, who gives me lots of things. It's kind of like a business deal, sort of. It's, give and take. And then there's a relationship to children, which is, all give, really, And when you were a child, it was pretty much all take. So you're kind of going up into giving more and more bittel, until finally the children are grown, and the spouse, you're alone with the spouse. And what are you about? What's the connection? It's even more along the lines of giving. Okay? It's even more along those lines. And then one of the spouses dies and you're alone. Hopefully by the time you've gone through these stages of bittul of self to a greater good, at the same time, around the same time, a person develops through stages of connection to his higher power, because as I learn to give and become more outward with less getting back, well, we talk about nachas as getting back, but you might know, some people on the call, I'm sure, have parents who demand things from them because they deserve their nachas. And look at what a destruction that leaves in its wake. When parents see the children as a nachas machine for their, not entertainment, but for their benefit, what happens as a result is the children's lives become sometimes destroyed. Sometimes they destroy marriages that way. Parents who ruin marriages, which happens plenty, they do it because you're not giving me the nachas that I deserve, Instead of me realizing I wasn't put in this world for me, and I wasn't given children for my sake, for my joy. I was given children for me to be of service to them, And everything goes haywire then. And you end up with these weird family, dysfunctional families, which we all know about, either from ourselves or from others around us. So there's no bittul there because probably there was no relationship there established as a young child, and therefore the relationships later on aren't proper because the wiring just isn't there. There's no trust. There's an assumption that people are trying to take from me, people are trying to get from me. My parents just want stuff from me, and why should I give them this? I have to protect myself from them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Fine. So. Just to finish up the cycle of life thing, in this particular aspect of it, that is, it's only one aspect of the cycle of life. The spouse dies, and there is an episode in the life of Viktor Frankl, the guy that came up with the Jewish Holocaust survivor, who came up with logotherapy. He wrote a book about man's search for meaning. Viktor Frankl was in the concentration camps, and one of his episodes was that he came up with this concept of the basic need for a human being is meaning. And that's not what I'm focusing on tonight, on this morning. But a man came to him totally distraught that his wife was killed in the Holocaust, and he had no reason for going on. And he said to him, like, "What's hurting you so much?" And he said, "What hurts me so much is that she's dead and I'm not. She's dead and I'm alive. I'm not going to kill myself, but I just feel so bitter that, that she died, that she's dead and that I'm alive, And, you know, like, how could I do this? Every day, every minute that I'm alive is like a sacrilege to her, you know, or something. You know, I won and she lost. Ugh, what's going on? So Victor said to him, and a thing that might not make sense to you, but it made sense to him in the moment. He said to him, who would you rather have died first, her or you? And the man thought and thought and thought and thought. And he said, I would rather her die first. And he said, why? And he said, and the man said, because I wouldn't want her to go through what I'm going through right now, being alone without me. I can't imagine how she would survive without me, because I can't imagine surviving without her. I wouldn't want her to go through this pain. I'd rather her die first. So Victor said to him, then you have meaning in your life right now, because she died first. You didn't die first. It's good for you to be alive, isn't it? You know, and the man, and that made sense to the man in that situation. You may have a Gemara Kasha on it, but Gemara Kashas are for Gemara, right? So that's about relationships and this bittul and this connection. But when the spouse dies, the person's alone. Hopefully, over the course of their lives, giving to others with less in return, a person comes to the state where their connection with the Rabbonu Shel Olam is more purified. And that's when we're asked to leave the world eventually, in a state where, you know, otherwise it would be kind of cruelty where we don't have the kelim to leave. I hope that makes sense. I don't want to elaborate on that right now, but I'm not talking about the cycle of the connection to the Rabbonu Shel Olam only. I'm talking about the way that the relationships work, okay? And the development from Kabedes Avicha Vesimecha in the small sense to a human father and mother, and how that's a model for the Kabedes Avicha Vesimecha, meaning the mitzvahs Aseh and the mitzvahs Los Aseh, Ahava and Yira, Kabed and Mora, to the Rabbonu Shel Olam, you know, who's Avinu Shebashamayim, you know. And we start to talk about that more. And Rabbi Akiva is famous for saying Avinu Malkeinu, you know. Malchus is a feminine midah. And, you know, this is a concept in Yiddishkeit that's very broad. What does it have to do with love, really, though? And what does it have to do with recovery from addiction, or for those who are not addicts, like I always say, probably a good number, maybe most of the people, you know, on Guard Your Eyes are not addicts. People come to Guard Your Eyes generally because it's a sin, you know, and that's why they think they want to stop. Those who are addicted, obviously, it's not, the issue isn't a sin. We use it so much, we make a double life for ourselves, we lie so much. The problem is really being a fake. The problem isn't really the sins we're doing. And, you know, first you got to take care of first things first, you know. So that's another story, and I'm going to speak about that. I have spoken about that already in a few calls already on this, you know, in this slot. But getting back to the love thing, the capacity to love is something that's usually missing. People say, a guy said to me on the phone yesterday, a therapist said to him, one of these big, big therapists, experts in the field, et cetera, met with him. The guy's about 75 days sober now, this guy, 78 days sober. He's clean today at 79. Hooray! Anyway, and he's not bucking for the Wall of Honor, don't worry. He was told by this therapist that he's not really an addict. This is all about a lack of connection, and he needs to learn how to connect. And once he learns how to connect to something, then he'll be okay, you know? And therefore he can connect to the Rabbonu Shel Olam and he'll be okay. So I asked this guy, so did you ask him how you ended up so screwed up in the first place? Like, how did you end up in this problem? I understand that that's very relevant to a person who's not doing this stuff. How do you not end up screwed up? okay, well, have a connection to things outside yourself. They're a bonus shalom, your friends. And this is the cycle that I was talking with you about, that, you know, you start off with, you know, your relationship with your parents as your mini God thing. And eventually you start to believe in a God, hopefully, as some of us do. And you start to have a relationship with this God, you know, and you know, and you move on from there. The relationship deepens and becomes more relevant. Which, you know, but obviously it didn't, because this guy was committing all these horrible sins, you know, these terrible, terrible sins repeatedly over and over and over and over and over and over. And like, where's the relationship with your God? Like, where's your God now? What's going on here? You know, and it's this and it's that. And if this was all he was doing, that would be one thing. But he was also faking, lying, isolating. You know, he's out there macaraving people, helping people, doing, doing kiruv and doing good service for the community and this and that. And in the meantime, he's got this other life where he's doing this other stuff. And, well, what do you say? Are you saying that he should quit all this stuff? You know, I'm not getting into that right now. I'm just saying, often for people who are ill like me, the more we do for the tzibur and for Torah and for mitzvahs, the worse we get in our addiction over time. We don't get better from it. We actually, over time, we get worse from it. So, and that's what happened with this guy, precisely. So telling him he has to have a relationship with Hashem or with something is not going to help him, because he can't, because that's how he ended up here. The reason that he got into the masturbation and the pornography to the degree that he did in the first place, just sinning once in a while, that's not an addiction, you know? That's not his problem. You know, his problem isn't zero of Atala. It's not sperm. That's not the problem. The problem is that he's got an affair. He's got an ongoing affair with these imaginary people, and it's continued for years. You know, he's not married yet, so it's not an affair. It's like, that's childish. The person who's been doing this stuff for years is so ill-equipped for a relationship with another person that's truly intimate and close, that it's a waste of time for him to get married at this point. All it's going to do is contravene everything marriage is about. It's going to contradict everything that marriage is about in real time. You know, he's going to cause himself and his spouse suffering. That doesn't mean to say that people say, well, how long do I have to be clean before I start dating? It's like, no, that's not. You don't have to guard your eyes for a psak, or Rabbi Twersky for a psak, about when you, that's not the issue I'm getting into. That's the whole of the question, and every case is individual. The point I'm just trying to make is, yes, it's true, nobody comes to marriage perfect, of course, except coming into marriage already having an affair is a bad way to start a marriage, you know? And the issue that I'm trying to focus in on is that there is an isolation going on. This person is already isolated. He's even isolated from his therapist. His own therapist he wasn't telling the truth about himself to. You know? And, you know, so the question is a connection. There's a misconnection, or a disconnection, rather, that this person and many of us have. And this is shared by alcoholics and drug addicts as well. There isn't that much of, there's a difference, but it's not that much of a difference. You're not going to solve the problem by, if you have a door and the hinge is broken, you don't, and when you open the door, it like sticks on the hinge, you're not going to fix the hinge by pushing the door open. You're just going to bust the hinge. You don't have the kalim. So the solution of people in 12-step recovery, at least, is we learn how to have loving, healthy relationships with other people in recovery. We lead with our weakness with each other, and we relate because of our worst character problems. Because of our worst problems, we open up to each other and We protect each other from the outside world that doesn't understand this stuff, and we care for each other, and we're always there for each other. You know, we learn how to have chaverim, o chavrusa, o misusa, the Gemara says. This is the chavrusa that it's talking about. We learn how, essentially, to love. We start getting the kalim of friendship. Friendship is the kind of friendship that the Chovas HaLevavos is referring to, the story, famous story Chovas HaLevavos brings about how many friends do you have. They say, you know, it's, you know, there's a story where the guy says, I have 1.5 friends, you know, and the son says, no, I have hundreds of friends, you know, I have dozens of friends. And the father asks him to do a certain thing, and he does it, and each of his friends bails out on him, and it's like, oh, man, daddy, I have no friends, you know what I mean? So he doesn't understand what friendship really is. Well, friendship isn't just the guy that who lives around the corner that you play ping pong with in his basement every day after school. That's not what friendship is. Friendship is something that has to do with intimacy and two people really loving each other. We can love each other, you know. It's not just David and Yohonas. It's all friends, you know. Louis Armstrong is right. You know, he sees people shaking hands saying, how do you do? And I know they're really saying, I love you. That doesn't mean that everybody that shakes their hands in business meetings loves each other, by, you know, far cry from that. But, you know, and saying it would cheapen the whole thing. But there are many of us who really do. And I can sit at Shacharis, and instead of thinking about the guy next to me and how he's too this for me and not enough that, he's not frum enough, he's too frum, he's here, he's there, like Reb Zvi Meyer usually says, that he says our natural state for all of us, he's talking about himself too, is to see everybody else as kitzoni. Everybody else is extreme. You know, we're the only ones that are in the middle. I can sit and doing that the whole davening if I choose to and ruin my davening. Or I can sit down in the shul and look around me before starting the davening, and I can say, Hareini mekabel alei mitzvah seishel v'ahavta l'reyacha kamocha, and I can just say to myself, my God, I'm sitting in a room of 35, 40 other guys who are all going to die one day. I'm sitting in a room of 35, 40 other guys who all need shidduchim, or who are all, God willing, going to get married, who are all going to have children, and God forbid the children are going to be sick at some time in their lives. Their children are going to, their wife will be sick at some time in their lives. Their business will have tzaras and problems at some time in their lives. They're going to have shalom bayis problems at some time. Their parents will, God forbid, be sick at some time in their lives, and this and that. And I'm living, life is not easy. And here's a room full of other people who have real needs, and they're good people, even if they're kitzonim, even though this guy shuckles too much and this guy doesn't shuckle enough and this guy is apathetic and this guy talks during davening and this guy yells at the guy talking during davening. It's like, even still, the issue is that they're other human beings and they're a lot like me, And I can love them. I can actually think, my God, these people are good. They're good people. Gevalt, Rebbeinu Shalom, I hope that they have all the good in their lives that you've given me in mine, even though I don't deserve it. And you've given me so much good. You know, while I was using porn and getting involved in terrible things and doing all this stuff, you were creating recovery fellowship for me to get involved with. You loved me while I was doing all that stuff so much. You created the solutions that I'm using now while I was using it. You didn't wait until I was good and then, okay, you deserve it now. You didn't do that. You know, you created the whole framework, and I came, you know, very sick into recovery. You know, and it was there, created and ready and functioning for me. You did that for me, you know. So looking down on ourselves and hating ourselves and this and that is ridiculous. If the Rebbeinu Shalom loves us so much, no matter what we're doing, you know, the question is, what do we want? So, you know, that's the Iker question, not how good am I, you know. What do I really want today out of life? What do I want to do, be today? What do I want to be? I'm a human being. What do I want to be? You know? So the loving has a lot to do with the ability to have a connection with another person. Dessler actually says famously that the more connection you have with another person, the more you do for another person, the more you're going to love them. And he connects it to the word have, give. And you know, somebody brought up a case at the beginning of the call where it was a letter that her wife wrote that she gave her husband all this love and she got nothing in return, et cetera, et cetera. If her husband was an addict of any kind, then he's probably a love cripple. Probably a love cripple. The emotions we have of love are very, very strong, but the intimacy we have is nil. The capacity to actually love is an action. It's not a feeling. The capacity we have to take actions of love, to be a loving person in action, are usually very, very small. And we keep thinking to ourselves, it's the sacrifices that I make for her, for him, for them, for him, for this. And it's not. That's not loving. If we grew up seeing our pet father go to work every day, then that's what we're going to do. That's not. We're not doing it out of love. We're doing it because we don't know any other way, and we're using it as a baseball bat to bludgeon our loved ones for not being good enough to us. You know, that's not love. That's just a habit of, well, a father goes to work, otherwise I'll be a failure. That's completely selfish. I'm sorry. That's not love. Love is giving ourselves to our children. Love is giving ourselves to our spouse. How can you give yourself to your spouse if your spouse doesn't even know who you are? You're giving someone else to your spouse. Intimacy is the entire basis of connection. And connecting is what loving is. You know, which is why in the Torah they use the word yedia, knowing, as a euphemism. Not really a euphemism, obviously, because of what we're saying. That's the word used for sex between a husband and a wife. You know, it doesn't use that word when it doesn't use that word when Hamor and Shem, you know, that Maisa there with Dina, it doesn't use that word. It uses a different word when he raped, you know, Dina. That's a whole different story, you know. And this poor wife, you know, she wasn't giving love to her husband even. There wasn't a connection between them, obviously. There was a fake connection. It's a two-way street. If I'm not going to be real with my wife, honest with her, and real with her, then I don't only make it impossible for me to love her, but I make it impossible for her to really love me because she's really loving somebody else. I'm not saying, again, that every guy should be telling his wife right away, but that the topic of opening up, of disclosure, has to be broached with a therapist or with a qualified person. It has to be broached at some point. There has to be something done about the fact that she doesn't know me. And this is why a lot of guys don't get into recovery, because they're terrified of being known, terrified. And they say, you know, if I'm going to be known, then lama li chayim, you know, and therefore they don't get into recovery because they hear, I actually know guys, you know, they were told, well, when you're sober 6 months, we'll tell your wife. And they never get sober for 6 months. They always lose their sobriety magically at like 5 months or something, you know, because they don't want to get to 6 months. obviously that's not a guy who has a first step where you know he needs sobriety, period. But he puts his marriage before his, you know, or he puts his ego before his recovery. And that's natural for people like me, you know, so it's a miracle that I'm here at all. But then there are a lot of guys who get caught and they still don't tell their wives, because what they do is they get caught and then they don't want to go to meetings or to a therapist because that would be making too big a deal out of it. Their point that they made to their wives that caused their wives, they think, to like calm down and just leave them alone and stop going insane was that they told their wives that it's not such a big deal and they'll never do it again and you won't even hear about it. That's it. If I start going to these meetings, if I start going to a therapist, or if I start, you know, whatever, doing these things that are actual real actions instead of just playing games, you know, Gingerbread Man and, you know, and Shuva 613, and I'm talking on Guard Your Eyes to these anonymous people hiding behind their computers, and that's going to get me sober, you know. I'm not taking any real actions. I can hide it. I can do it around without my wife finding out. Just that it's Viter not being known. It's all like, oh, well, then it will tell her if I start doing these serious things, it'll make a bigger deal out of this and it'll give her like she'll get more worried about it. Well, when did you start? Did you start before you were married or did you start 6 months ago? Well, I started 6 months ago. Really? No. Actually, the guy started before and it was a big problem before, you know, whatever. So that's not the issue and it's not going to go away. You know, there's no real relationship here. So for me, the loving is predicated on knowing. Now, there are different kinds of relationships. Father to a child isn't based on the child knowing the father, because the father and child relationship is based on me giving to him, and that's it. I'm a provider. I'm a life giver. A parent is a life giver to a child. That's basically it. You're a life giver, you know. That's why the Gemara says a Rebbe deserves more kavod, because a Rebbe gives the child olam haba, and the father only gives the child olam hazeh. But what do you mean? Doesn't a father, even in the old days, didn't the father teach the child any Torah at all? You know, like, he didn't, you know, the father doesn't say Kiddush. He doesn't teach the child how to serve the Rabbanu Shalom by saying Kiddush Friday night and learning occasionally, even what they, you know, in the time of the Mishnah and stuff, when there were a lot of Amoratzim, much more than today, you know, in the Prim community today, we're much more learned in terms of, you know, per capita than the Jewish people ever were, probably. But still, that's not what they're referring to, rampant Amoratzis, where the father doesn't teach him anything, you know. But that's the point, is the father's point is not bringing the child into Olam Haba. That's not the father's point. That's the Rebbe's point. The father's point is bringing him into Olam Hazeh. So however you slice it, you know, you got to step back. So that's for a child. When the child becomes an adult, the relationship might increase to the level that there's a friendship, that there's a deep friendship and love there that then might require you knowing me more. You know, maybe yes, maybe no, but husband and wife is different. Husband and wife is different. That's a different relationship. And the Sfarim say, you're stuck together, you know? You're stuck together. The Gemara, you know, the Gemara and Brochus was eating at the same table. It's, you know, that's why it says, Kol tzadik v'tzadik nichpe mechupasa shel chavero. Why does it say tzadik v'tzadik? Why doesn't it say, so you say kol tzadik, you know? Why does it say kol tzadik v'tzadik? So the Sfarim say that it means the tzadik and his wife. That's what it means. It's just the tzniest way of saying the tzadik and his wife. Because you're together. Train Ray and Delomis Parshin, you know, the Abba and the Ema. So, how have I? So where does the love come in? You know, so just to close, you know, love is giving. It's giving to another person. It's doing to another person. It's doing for them. You know, it's an action, you know, and it's not going to happen if I don't, it's not just me doing something. That's not loving. I do this and that's loving. It's within a context. We understand the context as a context of, I love you so much, an emotional context. The Torah, Kedoshah, and the Sfarim, and everything else that you're going to see, especially in recovery, understand the context is not a context of emotional love where we're like, oh, I love you. It's the context is a context of das. It's a context of knowing each other, of being real with each other, you know? That's rare among people who have addictions. It's very rare. It's with the people that we're the very closest to that we're the most hidden from. Everybody else sees a much more accurate picture based on our what they see. The ones who are the closest to us understand, know the least truth once we're into this mess of addiction. And it's so ironic, but that's the way it has to be, because I stand to lose the most from her finding out than from anyone else finding out. On the other hand, and I'll talk about this if somebody brings up the topic of disclosure to the wife, that's a real tough one. But there are a lot of guys who I've met on Guard Your Eyes who have only told their wives. They haven't told anything. I asked them, well, you know, just to get some general facts, does your wife know, you know? Oh, yeah, I told her. Yeah, I told her. We work on it together, and we talk about it, and we learn a safer Shmira Steinayim together or something like that. Oh, like, you know, and he's like, you know, going on and on. Well, have you told anybody else? No. Have you told anyone on Guard Your Eyes your full story, even behind your fake name? Oh, no. Well, no, I mean, I told them enough. I mean, you know, but I didn't tell them the whole thing, you know. And guys, of course, calling me from a private number. You can't see the number, you know, God forbid, you know. So even though I give him my regular cell phone. But anyway, I really never told anybody everything, only my wife. So I usually tell such a person, not immediately, but I help them understand that really they're cruel. The reason that they only told their wife is because they know that she'd rather die than her parents find out what kind of loser she married, you know? She'd rather die than her friends find out what kind of guy she's married to and what are things that her husband does. She'd rather die. So he knows his secret is safe with her. And that's why he told only her. That's the only reason. He was plotting inside of being unknown to everyone. He knows that he is isolated and alone with no real connection to anyone. And his imaginary connection to the Rabboni Shel Olam is destroyed by the fact that he's sinning to him on a regular basis. So that one doesn't quite work for him anymore because he's been through the tshuva roller coaster enough times that he's already nauseous. And he imagines the Rabboni Shel Olam is probably nauseous about it too. So what's he going to do? Who is he going to connect with? So he finds the only target that's a soft target and free and available, and it's his wife. And that's why he uses his wife or abuses his wife to tell her everything, you know? Now, if he has a wise wife, which, you know, most of them are too young or too whatever, they're not wise enough yet. But if he has a wise wife, his wife is going to insist on him going to a therapist, you know? And I would suggest a therapist because of my own bent, you know, to suggest a therapist who at least understands 12-step work and realizes that some guys and gals are addicts and some are not. But, you know, but anyway, but whatever it is, that he's got to go to get help and she cannot help him. You know, this is not my problem. This is your problem. It's not our problem. It's your problem. It affects us just like it affects Yiddishkeit, but it doesn't make it a Jewish problem if you're crazy, you know? So but most of them don't. Most of them are ashamed, just like the guy is. And most of them are young and, you know, whatever. Too scared. So we got to have the kalim to love, you know. We got to have the kalim to love. And addictive behaviors, hiding and lying and faking, are the antithesis of those kalim, not the loving. It's the they're the antithesis of the kalim for loving. The capacity for love is really the ability to be open, intimate, intimacy, open, you know, face to face. Face to face means you see my face. If it's face to face and you don't see my face, that's not face to face. That's, I don't know what it is, you know? And that's what the relationship is supposed to be, you know? anyway, so I don't think that I adequately talked enough about the topic of love here, but there's a lot more to say. But because there's a lot of other stuff that I didn't even get involved with along practical application of love in situations, you know. But, you know, we do the best we can. And again, the calls, I'm going to shut off the recording section on the call. And, excuse me. And then if anybody has any questions that they want to submit to We Quit Hiding and the number 2, We Quit Hiding 2 at Gmail. Please send them in so that maybe certain points that I said today we can talk about tomorrow in a better way, or whatever your suggestions are or questions that you have. It'll help things go if there are specific questions and specific issues to address and talk about. The other thing is that the first 10 minutes, for those who came on later, the first 10 minutes of the call, we don't record. And I use that time to allow people to have a chance at, to pose questions that they didn't email in. It's better to pose them on the call as far as I'm concerned. But if you want to and you feel like you can do, like you can pose a question better, please email it in. In a more clear way. This call is Monday through Thursday, 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Hatzlachim to everybody. Thank you. Bye.